and welcome to Neither the Time Nor the Space, a podcast about Doctor Who. My name is David, and as always, I am joined by the mystical Matt.
Hello there.
Well then, Matt, we are going to be discussing The Time Warrior this week.
Yeah, I shotgunned all four episodes this evening.
Ooh.
2 hour stint.
What a treat for you. 2 hours of unadulterated Pertwee. What more can you want from life?
Exactly. Before we start, David, as well, we've just got to say, this week's episode is dedicated to James Swift.
Why is that?
I know why, and James knows why. And that's just between the two of us.
Great. Well, here's to you, James, I guess.
Yeah. We'll say no more on that matter. That's between me and James.
Yeah, apparently I'm not included, so fair enough. Right then. Where do you want to start, Matt? What's been happening? How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. Very well. Good. I suppose the big news is I'm finally a permanent resident of Romania.
Yeah, it's happened.
It's finally happened. I queued for 3 hours to get my residency permit, but I finally have it.
And how does it feel, Matt?
Amazing, because the first thing I did when I got home was book a holiday. Now that I can finally leave the country.
There's an irony in that, isn't there?
Yeah.
For sure. But genuinely, the thing is, doing something like what you did is such a throw of the dice, isn't it?
Yeah, it could all go wrong any day.
But, well, you say that, but, like, you know, it seems like it's a gamble that has really paid off for you.
Yeah,
I'm delighted for that.
Last night, to celebrate, a friend and I went to a Korean barbecue restaurant, you know, where they have the grills built into the table, cook your own meat, and the first thing we did was turn the grill up too high, and there was loads of smoke in the restaurant, and the lady came and shouted at us.
Excellent.
So I took the afternoon off work, and I have to go right across the city, which is about an hour's journey.
Yeah.
And then, awkwardly, because I had to go in the afternoon, I got there at about 1:45, and at 2:00, the whole immigration office closes for an hour for lunch. So I got there, and on the big screen, it said number 3060. And I was like, I'll take a ticket, and then I'll be like towards the front of the line when they reopen.
Yeah.
I was person 3123, so I was 63rd in the queue.
Wow.
Yeah.
I didn't realise there'd be that many people on any given day wanting to become Romanian citizens.
Last time I went last week and my permit wasn't ready.
Uh-huh.
Except it was ready, they just didn't know where it was, which is
great.
Typical. There was only like 4 or 5 of us in the office. I went yesterday, and 2 or 3 times my Apple Watch buzzed and says that despite being inactive, I had a really high heartbeat. So you can tell I was pretty stressed about it.
Yeah.
So as soon as I got it, I knew I was going out for dinner last night. I didn't even go home. I just went straight into Bucharest Old Town, went to one of the bars and ordered 3 pints, and they were all for me.
Excellent. I'm glad it's all worked out for you.
So then this morning, I had a bit of time at work. I was like, I wonder where the cheapest flight is from Bucharest now I can leave. And I got a £26 flight to Milan. So I'm just going to Milan for a bit.
Lovely. When are you doing that?
Not the end of April, the start of May. The first weekend in May.
Nice.
Bit of a bucket list. You won't care about this, David. But I'm actually going to watch AC Milan play football.
Oh, great.
That's like one of the teams I've liked since I was little. They're a pretty big deal. Didn't think I'd ever actually go to their stadium, so why not? Screw it.
Yeah, I mean, they're a football team that I've heard of.
Yeah.
So,
have you ever heard of Stour Bucharest?
I have not. Oh. I'm afraid to say.
Good. They're the team everyone hates, so you've probably won a lot of fans in Romania by dissing them like that.
What team do all the Romanians like to support then?
Oh, we all support Dinamo Bucharest.
Oh, is it like a Manchester situation where you've got two rival teams in the same city?
You've actually got three, because you've got Dinamo, Steaua, and then there's Rapid. But where I live in Volontar, they've got their own team, but they're absolutely shocking. I think York City would absolutely hammer them. So.
Wow.
So, yeah. What else has happened this week? I went there. David, I've become so addicted to Stardew Valley.
Oh, right. Yeah, that can happen.
That's a large portion of my time since we last spoke. I was playing it this evening. It's winter. I've got no crops. I'm relying on income from my chickens laying eggs so I can make mayonnaise, and my cows giving me milk for cheese. You know, winter's hit my farm quite hard.
Well, I hope you managed to see it through.
Yeah. I'm not sure it's a financially viable industry, if I'm honest.
Well, you know. There's a lot to unpack there, isn't there? Yeah.
What about you? I feel like I've hogged the first 5 minutes talking about myself.
Well, I mean, it's... I feel like I've been a bit of a stuck record in recent times, because, honestly, these last few months, it's just been a case of just keeping my head down and cracking on with things. I've not had much time for decorating yet, so... I'm still in a room that is in dire need of a lick of paint. Just working and dadding has been the majority of how my time's been spent recently. Do have some sort of exciting stuff planned. For about in a week's time, which I'll tell you more about, you know, when we're on the other side of it.
Mm-hmm.
But for the time being, just kind of cracking on, to be honest. Ate some ramen for tea tonight.
Nice.
There's a Japanese place that delivers to us where we are.
I think I know the one you might be talking about. Remind me its name.
It's called Tao.
Yes. Yeah, I went there for one of my last meals before I moved out here.
I think it's not even been open for that long, so you're probably like one of their first customers.
Is it near
good.
Boys?
Yes, it is.
Yeah, it is the one I've been to. Yeah.
It's really nice there.
I had some great food there. I really like it.
Yeah, the first time we went, my partner and I got a vegetarian street food sharing platter thing, and it came on a little bamboo boat.
Oh, nice.
It was excellent. Yeah. But anyway, so I've not tried their ramen before, so I got ramen. I wasn't sure how they were going to do takeaway ramen, but they offered it as an option, so I was like, I'll take a punt on it. I was pleased to say that the broth arrived in a separate container. So it wasn't like...
Yeah, like sugar snap peas were still nice and crisp.
Yeah, it was good. It was a good time.
Would you say it's the best thing you've eaten in the past 7 days?
Oh, well, now, Matt, let's be careful here. We don't want to be reviving old segments, do we?
No. Sorry, that was a temporary moment of weakness from me there. It's just when you were talking about it, I was like, I'm sure we've been here before.
It was up there for sure.
Cool.
Yeah.
Would you like a movie review?
Yeah, go on.
Movie review. Movie review. Now, since last time, David, people have been dissing my movie reviews.
Have they?
Yeah. They say that I always give you an option of which movie, and then I just review them all anyway. So
it's true. You do. So
I think since last time, in fact, yeah, it was, because I've got a note that says I watched Doctor Who and the Daleks. I've only watched two movies.
Right.
So do you want movie one or movie two?
Can I have movie one, please, Matt?
Okay, that was Alita Battle Angel.
Ah, interesting.
I gave it 5 out of 10. It is the very definition of just a movie. It's fine.
Right.
Oh, no, the first sort of half hour, I was like, this is going to be great. I was really into the first half hour. Then it just all got a bit silly.
Yeah. It's based on a manga, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. Well, that leads me nicely into movie number... was it movie one?
No, movie two.
Movie two.
So the one I didn't choose is the one you're going to talk about now.
Yeah, which is Vampire Hunter D, Bloodlust.
Right.
What a load of crap that was. So one of my friends here was like, can we watch this movie? I've seen like clips of it, I think on TikTok. He's one of them, you know.
Yeah, right.
I was like, yeah, come round, we'll watch it. What a load of poop. It's about a girl who's been kidnapped by a vampire, so someone goes to hunt the vampire. But obviously the girl's in love with the vampire, so they don't want to die. So they just go to a vampire spaceship and live there.
Yeah, I mean, fine.
What a load of crap that was.
It's all about the execution, isn't it?
I've generously given that 4 out of 10. That might get reduced to a 3 this week, and it might be the worst film I've seen this year.
Matt, interesting thought for you. Have you considered choosing good films to watch?
The rule is, David, I've got to watch films I haven't seen before.
Yeah?
And I think I've seen all the good films.
I don't think that's likely, Matt.
Name a good film, and I bet I've seen it. Jurassic Park, seen it. Jurassic Park 2, Lost World, seen it. Jurassic Park 3, seen it. Jurassic World, seen it. Jurassic World 2, seen it. Is it Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom?
I don't know. I've not watched any of them. I've
seen all 6 of the good films, David.
Tell you what, Matt. Would you like to hear my thoughts on the first Dune film?
Oh yeah, this is rare. This is a David film review.
No, it isn't, because I haven't seen it yet. I know I keep saying I just need to watch it. Still haven't.
That's really upset me. That. I played right into your hands there, didn't I?
Well, tell you what, Matt. I'm going to have a bit more time on my hands over the next couple of weeks. Should I make a concerted effort to get it watched?
Now, this will mean nothing to any of the listeners, David. Mm-hmm. But I think Dune 2 is going to go in the same category as 13th Warrior.
That one's for you, Roy.
Yeah. That's for nobody but the three of us.
Oh, brilliant. Yeah.
A lot of secret in-jokes this week, isn't there?
Yeah, it seems like that. Let's be honest. That's pretty typical for a podcast in its, what, fifth year?
Yeah. Well, it's funny. This week, we got a message saying, when Sarah Jane Adventures coming back? I was just like, whenever I feel like it, I'd do this for me and nobody else.
Yeah, I feel like there was a period, right, Matt, when I got quite excited and thought that other people were listening to this.
Yeah.
That thrill has gone for me. This is just a catch-up with you once a fortnight that just I happen to record now.
Yeah, yeah. And... you know, it's just something to do, isn't it? It fills an evening.
That it does. I'll tell you what I have. You mentioned Stardew Valley. Do you want to know what's actually been eating up my free time?
Go on.
These last few days. I'm back on the Legends of Runeterra. which is a digital collectible card game set in the world of League of Legends.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
You really should meet my big brother. As soon as you say the words, like, collectible card game, he's on that like a bloodhound.
Yeah. Has he ever played Sorcery Contested Realm?
I don't believe so, no.
He I got mean, really good,
what
good
was
luck
the one
finding
he got
some,
really but... into?
The big three, obviously, Magic the Gathering, Pokemon, and Yu-Gi-Oh.
He got really into, like, I think it was called Vanguard Card Battle. And it was really weird because instead of, like, little monsters like you have on Pokemon cards, it was, like, sexy Japanese baby girls and, like, one was a robot otter. And I remember, like, having quite a frank discussion, like, look at this.
Yeah, I mean, fortunately, none of that going on in Legends of Runeterra. But still, if I were to take a step back and look at what I'm actually doing with my life...
David, I'm a man who spent his day planning how he was going to plant his virtual potatoes, so...
Yeah, so long as we're happy, eh? That's what matters.
I'll be happy when I build the greenhouse. Oh, I can't wait to do that.
Yeah, well... Good luck with that endeavor.
What else do we normally talk about?
Well, when I've actually done some preparation, we'd do some Docbusters. But
that's one of our regular features, isn't it? The fact that you haven't done your regular feature.
Yeah. I'm going to try very hard for
next
episode.
Matt, I'm so busy. I couldn't possibly have written a quiz for this week. Meanwhile, ploughed like 60 hours into an online card game. Yeah, I just haven't got a moment to spare to paint my living room, you said earlier. Oh, yeah, no, but I've been just wiping out tribes on League of Legends. Are you aware of the concept of priorities, David?
Very, very loosely.
I feel like that was a bit of a character assassination.
Yeah, no, it's valid. It's perfectly valid. I'll tell you what, though. I said a while ago we need to workshop this idea. Because I had an idea for a segment, a replacement for Docbusters that requires much less preparation from on my part. But it's only really half an idea. And it needs a title, and it probably needs some sort of a twist. Do you just want to workshop it on air?
Yeah, let's go for it. Let's open the think tank.
So, the idea such that is that I had was, what if we played 20 questions, but it was exclusively Doctor Who stuff?
Okay.
So, obviously, I'm going to say... The fact that you know it's going to be a Doctor Who thing means that we can knock at least 5 questions off your total, right?
Yeah.
Maybe even 10. Do you could do it in 10?
I think so.
Okay. And in an ideal world, this segment would have some kind of Doctor Who-related pun title.
But yeah.
I'm struggling on that front.
I'll have a think. I'll have a think.
Because my original thought was... type 20 questions, because of course the TARDIS is a type 40, but then I was like, that's a stretch, isn't it? Is there even a type? Presumably there's a type 20 TARDIS.
I've got it, David.
What is it?
It's called the Rings of Akaten questions.
Oh, there we go. He's
done
it.
We've got it. We've got it.
Oh, that was fast work, Matt.
Yeah.
Let's go for it. The Rings of Akaten questions then. Okay, I'm thinking of something. Let's give this a whirl.
But this isn't one of my questions, but can I just clarify some of the rules?
Sure.
Can it literally be anything from Doctor Who?
Okay, so my main rule was that it's got to be in-universe, right?
Okay.
So it's not going to be John Nathan Turner or Mark Gatiss or whatever.
Right.
It.
Right. My first question then, David.
Yeah.
Is this something which appears in Classic Who?
Yes.
And by that I mean, sorry, is it? It appears exclusively in Classic Who.
No. Okay, so that's two questions down.
That was one question and a clarification.
No. That was two questions, Matt. Because if I'd said no,
I would.
You see what I mean?
Is it an alien race?
No.
Is it an institution?
No.
Is it a piece of technology?
Yes.
Is it used by the Doctor?
Yes.
Is it the sonic screwdriver?
It is. He's got it in seven questions, folks.
There we go.
Was that good
back
for you,
Matt? 10 or fewer questions.
Was that fun? Did we have a nice time?
Yeah. And ultimately, right. If we didn't, who cares? People are making the life decision to listen. And I feel that's more on them than it is on us.
It absolutely is. Well, I'll tell you what, that's not going to be a permanent replacement for Docbusters.
Yeah.
But it's a fallback for when I haven't prepared it.
I like it.
Yeah, there we go.
See, one of the things I thought, I don't know whether that, as a potential segment, okay. Yeah. So on BBC Radio 4, there is a sports programme called Fighting Talk.
Right.
And one of the things they have on there, it's called Defend the Indefensible.
Right.
Where you're given a topic and you have to talk about it for 30 seconds, but it has to be the opposite to your point of view.
I believe Verity do this one.
Ah, screw it then. We're not doing that. Leave it to them.
Yeah, they do it.
They've done everything. They're like the bloody Simpsons.
between them and Radio Free Scaro, let's be honest.
God,
they cover a lot of ground. Not like us. We're proper indie. Doctor Who podcasting.
Yeah.
Doctor Who podcasting on the edge.
Yeah, is that a nice way of saying, like, unskilled?
Yeah.
Like, poorly planned, underproduced, shoestring budget, sat at my dining room table.
Yeah. Me with some ominous buzzing in my ears that I'm really hoping isn't going to pick up on my recording.
No.
Yeah, sure. But anyway, should we stop beating about the bush? Because I'll be honest, Matt, I am just desperate to know what you made of the Time Warrior. Mm. I don't want to get my hopes up too much, but I feel like in my heart of hearts, if you are the man that I think you are, I think you'll have had a good time with this one.
Mm. What if I'm not the man you think I am? What if I'm the Riddler?
Well, that would be a surprise, for sure. Mm. I might need to take a bit of time away to adjust to that. But ultimately, I think I'd grow to accept it.
Right. In terms of Pertwee stories, we have seen Spearhead from Space.
We have
seen The Demons. Mm-hmm. Am I right in thinking this is the third? We've only seen the three.
I know, he's in
the Five Doctors.
You've seen him in the Five Doctors. And yeah. I'm trying to think, you've not watched any Pertwee for anyone else, have you?
No, but there was that time I was watching something and it ticked over and I watched a bit of Peladon.
Yeah.
But I like Spearhead from Space for me is legitimately like S tier. I thought that was really, really good.
Yeah.
And The Demons is a bit silly, but it's still good. I don't think I'd put this as strong as Spearhead from Space, but I had a pretty good time with this.
Yeah, it's just
it's certainly a high B, possibly an A.
Yeah, I'd say I'd put it in an A, personally. Mm. Because for me, it's just a rollicking good time of a story.
Yeah.
It doesn't outstay its welcome. It's got some great supporting performances, I think.
And, you know, it's a lot of things I've seen. Like,
yeah,
I've seen Sarah Jane.
Yeah.
I've seen Sontarans. But it was pretty cool to see the beginning of that journey.
Yeah, yeah. And actually, there's another first in this story, which I don't know if you're aware of.
I am.
Yeah, I am. First mention of Gallifrey.
Yeah, yeah. I was watching this on a perfectly legal streaming site.
Uh-huh.
And I had a bit of... Because it was Series 11, Episode 1, that streaming site was desperate. I watched The Woman Who Fell to Earth.
Yeah. Different era, I think it's fair to say.
But, yeah, I had a good time with this. I took quite a lot from watching it. You know, it wasn't just I was blindly watching it smiling. Like, I thought it was good. I felt like the sort of historical subplot was kind of... I know that's the setting, but towards the end, I could take or leave that.
Yes, yeah. I mean, certainly, I think if it was even one more episode, you'd be rolling your eyes and thinking, like, oh, God, are we still at this bloody castle?
Mm.
But I think it doesn't outstay its welcome, and that mixture of the medieval setting with the sci-fi elements, I think, is a really winning combination, done really well here. Mm. I think one of Doctor Who's best forays into the medieval period.
How many times have we seen stories where aliens land on Earth, immediately meet a terrible human being, join forces, and then the terrible human being always betrays the alien, and then there's a little fight at the end? And
yeah, it's probably one of the more standard templates of Doctor Who story. But you've got to remember, this is coming relatively early in the run.
Mm.
The show's only in its 10th year at this point. So I think, it's the kind of thing that I think, if you were doing a story like this now, you'd need another element to it.
Yeah.
This plays it with a pretty straight bat. It's not overly complicated. But it didn't need to be, because no one had ever seen a Sontaran before.
Yeah.
That was novelty enough. Especially if you were one of the sort of 7-year-olds watching it on a Saturday evening, week to week, with your beans on toast. That was enough back then, in a way that maybe it wouldn't be now. So we can't lose sight of that. Also, I think it's just nice to see old Pertwee off-world, isn't it? Or in a different time period.
Yeah, I didn't know that changed. You know, both stories I've seen are him trapped on Earth. So when he went into the TARDIS, I was like, oh, right, he'll be back soon. And then it just flew off.
Yeah, basically, they just got bored. They did two series of him being properly exiled. And then they were just like, oh, we can't just keep doing the same stories on Earth over and over again. So they kept him in unit, but let him go off and do other stuff in between. Which does make it refreshing. And also, of course, we mentioned it briefly, but come on, first ever Sarah Jane Smith story.
Yeah. And she's really good in this.
She is. Like, right from the get-go.
Yeah, I mean, we'll probably talk about her introduction when we get to it, but...
Yeah.
Like, straight away, I was like, it's a wink and a nod.
Yeah.
30 years before I get the reference.
Excellent. Yeah, so shall we get into the detail of this one, then?
Yeah, let's do it. So, The Time Warrior. As we've said, it's the first story from Season 11, from the 15th of December, 1973, to the 5th of January, 1974.
Yeah.
Lovely, lovely feel of Christmas about it, isn't there?
Oh, yeah, it's such a festive treat, this one.
Mm. It's directed by Alan Bromley and written by Robert Holmes.
Who I think you've seen Spearhead from Space. I'm trying to wonder if there's any others that we've done of his. Oh, he co-wrote Brain and Morbius.
Okay, yeah.
We've not done Androzani yet. That's one of his.
Oh, God, I forgot about Brain and Morbius.
Yeah.
Because we'll be watching some more Tom Baker soon, and that is some mad shit, that area, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, we can do that next time if you want, Matt.
What, Brain of Morbius?
Yeah, if you just do Brain of Morbius, like, no, every couple of months.
In fact, I think what we should start doing, right?
Yeah.
Like we did when we got to watching this, is at the end, I want you to tell me which Tom Baker story you want to watch. And I'm going to make a suggestion as well, and we'll decide between the two of us.
Right, okay.
Because I've got a plan.
I'll start thinking about it then.
Right.
There's a lot of ways we could go with old Tom Baker.
Yeah. Right, so, episode one. Something falls to medieval Earth. And whatever effect they use for 1973 is phenomenal.
Yeah.
It looked great.
It's not bad, is it?
You know, like, we've seen worse in the Chibnall era.
Yeah, we have. Especially some of Series 30.
Mm. So, we're introduced to two characters here.
Yeah.
Iron Gron and Blood Axe.
Okay. Let's take a second to immediately talk about Iron Gron, played by David Dacre.
Mm-hmm.
What are your thoughts on Iron Gron?
Despite being quite pantomime, it's pretty good.
He's compelling, I think.
Yeah.
It's a great performance. I would say one of the most memorable, like, minor villain performances in classic Who.
Mm-hmm.
As you say, it is a bit panto, but it just manages to stay just the right side of it.
Yeah.
Pretty much all the way through. I've just been having a look at some of his other credits. He was in Only Fools and Horses and Porridge, Minder. Most interesting to me, I wasn't aware of this, but it's, now that it's mentioned, I'm like, oh yeah, of course. He plays Kevin's dad in Time Bandits.
Ah.
So.
That's pretty good to know.
Yeah. I mean, basically, he's someone who, it looks like he was getting work pretty consistently all through his career.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, you can see why. And I think it's one of three, I would say, really outstanding guest performances in this story.
Mm-hmm. So, the two of them are sat at a feasting table, except there ain't no feast. There's no food left and the wine's gone sour.
Yeah.
But they're very jealous of Sir Edward of Wessex, because he's just probably having a big old feast, isn't he?
Yeah.
So, whilst they're complaining about this, they see something land in the forest. And despite it being a star that fell from the heavens, as they say, they just both go, well, we'll probably leave that till the morning.
Yeah.
Okay. So, when they get there, it opens and out comes a Sontaran. It's Commander Lynx, who claims Earth for the Sontaran Empire. And I couldn't tell if this was an intentional joke, but he plants a very pathetic little flag.
Definitely intentional.
Yeah. There's quite a few intentional gags in this episode.
Yeah, Robert Holmes is a really funny writer.
Yeah.
Like, he's... I think... He does have the reputation, of course, of having written more classic Who than any other writer. So his fingerprints are all over this show. And humour is an integral part of Doctor Who. And I think he was one of those people that really brought that out of the show, if you like. I believe, the way it tends to get interpreted is that the Sontarans, in effect, are... I mean, there's certainly a parody of, you know, the military mindset. And I think there is a sort of an element of a critique of colonialism as well.
Yeah.
At play in this story. Which, of course, is interesting to think about. The time in which this was being written, we weren't really doing critiques of colonialism, per se. No. So, yeah, that's kind of cool, I think.
Right, so he needs to repair his ship, and he offers Iron-Gron weapons in exchange for a place to hide and mend his ship.
Yeah.
So that's the setup of that little bit. We then see the Doctor and the Brigadier making room for the Doctor to stay in a unit base, because people are going missing, specifically scientists working on space technology.
Yeah.
So to link those two plot points, we find a Sontaran has been taking them to fix his ship. Iron-Gron shows Bloodaxe a musket and says this is how we're going to take over Sir Edward's castle. Now, the Doctor meets, at this point, Professor Rubish.
Yes.
And this is where a lot of the comedy comes from.
Yeah. So, I'll mention here, Donald Pelmier, who plays Professor Rubish. No Wikipedia page. Can't tell you a thing about him.
Right. Well,
it's a great performance, I think.
Especially, it starts where the Doctor's kind of chuntering to himself.
Yeah.
And Professor Rubish introduces himself by just going, Rubish. And the Doctor looks offended as though he said rubbish.
Yeah.
And then goes, I beg your pardon, in that beautiful voice of Pertwee's. Mm-hmm. And, you know, yeah, he's just like a little comedy character. But this is, more importantly, where Sarah Jane Smith enters for the first time.
Yeah.
And claims to be a virologist named Lavinia. And I was like, oh, it's Aunt Lavinia from K-9 and Company.
I hadn't even... I'd forgotten that. So they are consistent with that, aren't they?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
So the Doctor says, oh, I'm aware of your work, but in order for you to be the person who wrote this paper on a virus I read, you must have written it when you were 5. And I'll read this next part of my notes verbatim. The Doctor seems to really like her. Oh no, he just wants her to make him some coffee. Different time, wasn't it? Different time.
It was. I mean, that's Pertwee in a nutshell, though, isn't it?
Yeah. So he enters the TARDIS to go make himself some coffee. This is the first time we see Edward of Wessex. He's discussing Iron-Gron, who has caught one of Edward's scouts.
Yeah.
So Iron-Gron summons Lynx, and this is where Professor Rubish works out Sarah Jane Smith is not Lavinia. He thinks she's a spy.
Yeah.
Lynx has some sort of special tech that makes the scout tell all of Sir Edward's plan.
Yeah, and I was. It was interesting to me watching this again and thinking about that piece of kit that Lynx has.
Mm.
I don't know that we've seen that. We certainly haven't seen it in Yoo-Hoo. I don't think.
No.
These days, if you see a Sontaran, they're usually just sort of toting a pretty bog-standard space gun.
Yeah, they're more about aggression than interrogation, aren't they, nowadays?
Yeah.
And then whilst that's going on, Iron Grawn says something, but Lynx just blasts his sword in half. So the power dynamic is Lynx is really kind of running the show.
Yeah.
The Doctor detects some Delta particles as Rubish disappears, and then detects a ghost image of a Sontaran. Like, again, I thought that was a pretty cool effect, but it doesn't really lean into anything later, does it?
No, not massively. But, you know, it was effective for what they could do at the time on a BBC budget.
So the Brig arrives to see what's what, and the Doctor says there is matter and time transference. Mm. So the Doctor uses the TARDIS to go back in time, and Sarah Jane Smith has snuck on board with him as a stowaway. Yeah. So an archer, now I've written here an archer, and I didn't learn this character's name until the end of episode 4 when they say goodbye to him. Yes. I don't know if he's named, but it's Hal.
It is Hal. I think he is named earlier, but likewise, it wasn't really until that final scene where it was cemented for me as well. He's just one of those characters who's just around periodically all the way through.
So he aims a longbow at Iron Grawn, but Sarah Jane Smith interrupts, asking where the telephone is. But he fires the arrow that misses, so Iron Grawn is aware there's somebody firing at him. So he sends his men down who take Sarah Jane Smith.
Yeah.
The Doctor follows and sees the Sontaran's potato head. Why did the guy playing the Sontaran make the decision to just stick his tongue out through the mask a little bit? Makes it really weird.
I think that's exactly why. I think it was a conscious decision to just make it as sort of gross and alien as possible.
Well, you've got this big intimidating Sontaran, and then the episode ends with him just like going... It's a bit weird, isn't it?
Honestly, that moment's become pretty iconic.
For that reason. What's going on?
Yeah. It's good. I like it. I mean, we haven't talked yet much about Kevin Lindsay's performance as Lynx, but what do you think of him as the OG Sontaran?
I liked it because they weren't just shouting Sontar Ha. You know, he's got a bit of leeway to, you know, show a little bit of acting. I know that's difficult when you're wearing a big potato mask.
Yeah, but he does a valiant job of it, I think. I mean, the thing that really strikes me, both with the performance and with the writing, is just how fully formed the Sontarans are right from this first story.
Yes, yeah.
Which is unusual for Doctor Who. If you compare it to, like, the other big villains, like the Daleks or the Cybermen, where almost immediately by the, you know, they're getting sort of contradictory backstories, and, you know, the early outings feel a little bit ropey and not quite there.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas, yeah, with the Sontarans, they're just a fully realised, thought through alien villain. In fact, I was thinking, in some ways, they're one of the ones that you could almost imagine just snipping out of Doctor Who and dumping into Star Trek with almost no tweaks needed.
Mm.
If that makes sense.
Yeah, like, there's little nods to things in this story. So, for example, the one I'm thinking of is where the Doctor talks about the war with the Nymans.
Yeah.
And it's kind of just like a throwaway line here, but then
I think it's Rutans he mentions.
Why did I say Nymans? Are they a thing?
Nymans are a thing, but I don't think they'd been conceived of just yet.
Yeah, sorry, the Rutans.
Yes.
And, you know, it's just mentioned in passing here.
Yeah. I'll tell you what,
The Nymans, that big bull monster, isn't it?
Yes. I'll tell you what, Can I skip ahead a little bit to the end of the episode? I know what I know what Tom Baker story I'm going to suggest. Do you want me to mention it now, or shall I leave it?
Save it till the end.
Okie dokie.
Okay. Right. Episode 2. Sarah Jane Smith is taken to Iron. So too is the Archer. So we find out he works for Lady Elena, and Sarah Jane Smith doesn't really understand where or when she is, so she suspects it's a tourist trap.
Yeah. This kind of reminds me of, if you cast your mind all the way back to Rose, that first scene in the warehouse with the Autons, and she's like guessing, is this Derek? Oh, is it students? You know, finding the rational explanation. You know, it's that same impulse, isn't
it? Yeah, well, Sarah Jane Smith literally says, is this a ragweek prank or something?
Yeah, exactly.
So Lynx arrives and assesses Sarah Jane, says she's not of this time, and uses his interrogation machine. Lynx unveils his brand new super weapon, which is a remote-controlled set of armour.
Yeah.
Doesn't look great in this. When I was saying how good the effects were,
yeah,
there's a bit where he gets his head cut off, and you can just see he's got really high shoulders because it's just a man in a suit.
Yeah, that's. I will say, this. Out of all the sort of visual elements of this story, this is the bit that I think holds up least well, in that, you know, it's just clearly just some padded silver fabric. Like, it doesn't look remotely metallic. It looks like he's wearing a big pillow.
Yeah, nice quilt.
Yeah.
So I did like this plot point, though, where they're so enamoured with it that Sarah Jane just walks away.
Yeah.
They're like, oh, where's she gone? Ah, don't worry, a guard will get her. Don't worry about that.
The thing that I think really makes Iron Grodd as a character, right, is, for all his talk of, you know, being like, you know, this big fancy chief, he has the emotional maturity of a 14-year-old.
Yeah.
He just wants to have fights, eat and drink, and play with his toys. You know? Yeah.
Like, he's just purely fueled by testosterone, isn't he?
Yeah. Yeah.
So, the Doctor sees this, but then we see Hal being executed. But rather than being beheaded, he's told he's going to fight Angron. I keep saying Angron, that's a character from Warhammer. Iron Gron's champion.
Yeah.
So he fires some arrows into this big suit. Doesn't really do anything. Except the Doctor then whips out a crossbow and is so accurate, he's able to shoot the remote control out of Iron Ron's hand.
Yeah.
Sarah Jane steps in to save Hal, and the armor is beheaded because it starts malfunctioning. Some of Iron Ron's men attack it because it's seemingly going to attack them. They cut its head off, and it's still fighting. You know, it's great.
Yeah. Yeah.
For the first time, Iron Ron sees Lynx without his helmet, and the Doctor sees musket production. So the Doctor is now concerned that there is weaponry ahead of its time, meaning human beings might, I think at one point he says, they'll make an atomic bomb and end the world before like the 17th century.
Yes, yeah.
So the Doctor talks to Rubish, because all the scientists are hypnotized except him, because he didn't have his glasses, and it was some sort of visual form of hypnotism.
You know what? I love that as a clever bit of plotting. Because it's slightly comical, but also such a gift, you know, writing-wise, it now means that you've got Rubish in your back pocket as an extra ally. That really struck me on this watch-through, just like, oh, that's clever writing from Holmes there.
Yeah, like, because, yeah, it frees up that character.
Yeah.
But in quite a fun, playful way that's in keeping with that character.
Yeah, exactly.
So, yeah, he's blind without his glasses. Lynx then confronts the Doctor and zaps him. I mean, just kind of pushes him over a bit, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Sarah Jane speaks with Lady Elena and Sir Edward, and she thinks at this point the Doctor is the bad guy because he's got this ship that's transported her through time. She suspects he's doing the same with the scientists.
Yeah, and you know what? This is... this really struck me. We've never had in New Who, if memory serves, a companion get introduced and spend most of their first story, or at least a good chunk of it, suspicious of the Doctor. Which I think is such an interesting dynamic to start off with a companion. The template these days is just they meet the Doctor and they're like immediately best mates.
Yeah, that's true.
And that's fine.
But... And even when the companion's working the Doctor out a little bit.
Yeah.
They're never kind of outwardly suspicious.
Yeah, they're putting the effort in because they've already intrigued and charmed by them. You know, we saw that with the church on Ruby Road. And look, that episode is still percolating for me, right? I've only watched it a couple of times, and my opinion of it might not be fully formed until we've had two series with Judy Gatwa's Doctor, for all I know. But at the moment, when I look back on it and I think about how it establishes the dynamic between Ruby and the Doctor, it feels a little safe to me. So especially when you contrast it with something like this.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. And also, I the thing that I love about this as well is, again, it's hammering home that Sarah Jane Smith is an investigative reporter. It is her job to be suspicious of other people's motivations and actions.
Am I right in thinking
piecing together
that the previous companion was Liz Shaw?
No, Joe Grant.
Okay.
Have we done Joe yet? Have you met Joe?
No.
Or we that's something that we need to rectify next time we do Pertwee.
Because, because I'm unaware of her, I thought,
yeah,
it's interesting because if you put her alongside Liz Shaw, they're both, you know, these kind of strong, competent, intelligent women.
Yeah.
But also so different from one another.
Yes. Well, to be honest, I think Joe Grant might be the missing piece of the puzzle for you in that respect, because you think about Liz Shaw, Joe Grant, they went very much in the opposite direction. Joe is sweet and bubbly and friendly, and is a brilliantly realised character in her own way. But with Sarah Jane Smith, they almost find that perfect balance between those two extremes with those characters.
In fact, I have seen. She was in The Demons, wasn't she?
Yes. Yeah, she is. Yeah. Of course she is.
Yeah, that's right. Yes, because she was friendly with not Brigadier Lethbridge Stewart, the other unit guy.
Yates.
That's him. Right. Let's continue then. So, Doctor speaks to Lynx and mentions the Rutan War that I mentioned earlier. And this is where the Doctor mentions Gallifrey.
Yes. Yeah, which I'd forgotten that this was the first ever mention of Gallifrey. And he just tosses it out there.
Yeah, he just goes, "Where are you from? Gallifrey."
Yeah. It's literally just like, oh, no one's ever thought to think of a name for the planet before. This'll do. And all of a sudden, you know, Doctor Who history is made forever.
Yeah.
It's fascinating, isn't it? The way this show just evolves in this almost haphazard fashion.
Right. Lynx wants the Doctor to fix his ship and puts the Doctor on auto command. This is where the Doctor worries about weaponry introduced before its time. Sarah Jane and Hal break into Iron Grun's castle, and we find out he plans to take Sir Edward's castle.
Yeah.
So the Doctor gets Rubish to turn off the auto command, but he hasn't got his glasses, so he presses the wrong button a couple of times.
Yeah.
Then we get a bit of Venetian Aikido.
Yeah. First of a few moments.
It's not the best one. Let's agree on that.
But... We got that to look forward to.
So it ends with Iron Grun pulling an axe on the Doctor. That's the end of episode two. So this time, Hal shoots the axe from Iron Grun's hand. Some extremely accurate archery going on in these episodes.
Absolutely.
The Doctor escapes, and then Rubish just grinds down some glass to make himself a monocle so he can finally see.
Yeah. He's resourceful. You've got to give him that.
Mm. I think we'd describe Rubish as resourceful, and we'll describe the Doctor as a long-shank rascal with a mighty nose.
That's brilliant. Just... yeah, I mean, you could tell Robert Holmes was having so much fun writing the medieval dialogue.
Mm.
Yeah, and fair play to him. It's good stuff.
So, the Doctor explains to Sarah Jane that he's not working for Iron Grun, but he is affiliated with UNIT.
Mm.
He meets Sir Edward and Elena and says he will work and serve them.
Yeah.
And he plans to use an illusion to scare Iron Grun away.
Yeah, well, let's pause for a second, because something we haven't talked about much is Sir Edward. And I would say if there's one big flaw in this story, it's that Sir Edward is a complete wet flannel.
Yeah.
And you just can't root for him at all.
No, because like, he's not, like, a strong nobleman. He's not shown as some sort of military genius. He is just a guy in a chair.
Or even I think if I were writing this, or at least doing some touch ups to the script, what I would want is to show some reason why Edward is deserving of his power and status by being, I don't know, charitable, and you know, that he maybe runs a thriving, happy community. And yes, he doesn't have a big military, but that's because he's not been focused on that. He's been focused on making sure that his citizens are well provided for and things.
But also, if you think of Iron Grun, you know, he's got dark hair, dark beard, dark eyes. He looks like a bad guy.
Yeah.
And, you know, in 1973, when you were making this, you would want someone fair-haired and, you know, a bit of a Prince Charming. Instead, they've got, like, fucking Cat Weasel sat in the chair.
Yeah. Yeah, he's hard to root for.
Yeah.
So, the thing is, and when you're being asked to root against Iron Grun, but then Iron Grun, despite being despicable, is also highly entertaining.
Mm.
It does mean that you may be you're asking a lot of the audience to not want Iron Grun to have at least some kind of victory.
Mm. Okay, so yeah, Iron Grun then arrives to invade the castle, and it looks well defended, but it's because there's a lot of dummies on the wall.
Yeah.
So when he attacks, the Doctor just has a whale of a time throwing bombs and smoke bombs at him.
Yeah, which, you know, it's great. It's a lovely scene. It's like, and it's so just wonderfully Doctorish. Like, oh yeah, there's a marauding army come to attack this castle. How should we deal with it? I don't know. I'll cook up some smoke bombs.
Mm.
That delights me.
I think Iron Grun, though, was a bit quick to retreat, because none of his men were coming to any harm.
Yeah.
You've just got to wait it out till there's more smoke.
I guess he just was... He'd never experienced something like that before, and it was just... It panicked him.
But also, his military prowess, he's like, right, guys, let's retreat for now, but we'll come back tomorrow and do the exact same thing.
Yeah.
They'll never see it coming.
Yeah.
So Lynx then chastises him for retreating. Obviously, Sontarans never retreat. The Doctor says, instead of losing our castle, why don't we go on the offensive and capture Iron Grons? We then get like the first sign of dissension as Iron Gron plans to overthrow Lynx. The Doctor and Sarah Jane Smith go back to Rubish, and we find Lynx is planning to leave. So his time here is coming to an end.
Yeah.
So he goes to see his scientists. Obviously, the Doctor and Sarah Jane are there talking to Rubish. And the Doctor says, look, I will help you fix your ship and leave if you return all the captives to their time, because when your ship takes off, it's going to destroy the castle.
Yeah.
So he just zaps him again.
Yeah.
Again, I think he's got it set to stun. It just knocks the Doctor over for a bit.
You know, the other thing that jumped out to me with this sort of face-off, because it's the first proper real face-to-face with the Doctor and Lynx, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
And, oh no, actually, that was the previous scene, wasn't it?
Yeah, where, they do have a talk.
Yeah, I forgot to mention then. What I think is really interesting is it becomes clear that the Doctor is familiar with Sontarans. And in the first and second Doctor's eras, any time you met a new alien, it was the Doctor's first time encountering them as well.
Yes, yeah.
And all of a sudden, we're getting a Doctor who is well-travelled and already knows what they're dealing with to an extent.
Mm-hmm.
And I think sometimes New Who lent into that a bit too much. I think especially in the Tennant era, it seemed like he would just never be surprised by anything.
Yeah, that's right. He was sort of the all-knowing, wasn't he?
Yeah, and I prefer it when there's a bit of a balance. But that was one of the things that struck me with this, is that not only are the Sontarans appearing fully formed, but there's also this implied previous history already.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
Right, so that is where episode 3 ends. We're into episode 4 now.
We are.
So all of Lynx's prisoners are exhausted. And whilst having this conversation, the Doctor discusses the thermic vent. He says that the only way to beat a Sontaran, hit them on the back of the head. And the reason he's having that conversation is so Rubish can do it. He's instructing Rubish.
Yeah.
So he knocks Lynx out with a big baton of wood, and they tie him up. Bloodaxe approaches, so the Doctor just puts on Lynx's helmet, speaks exactly like he always does.
Yeah.
And Bloodaxe goes, oh wow, yeah, that must be Lynx.
To be fair, Bloodaxe has not done much to convince us that he is a great intellect at any point. Like, he is very much just the useful idiot right-hand man.
He's kind of the hired goon, isn't he?
Yeah. So,
the Doctor then plans to use the robot armour from previous episodes to stall Iron Gron.
Mm-hmm.
Sarah Jane has, however, gone to the kitchen because she plans to sort of poison all of Iron Gron's men.
Mm-hmm.
So the Doctor poses as the robot.
Yeah.
Iron Gron challenges it to a fight. Even though the robot's going, no, I've been programmed not to fight you, Iron Gron's adamant for some reason. But the robot bests him.
Yes.
So in order to see what's going on, Iron Gron lifts the visor of the helmet to reveal the Doctor, who they all think is a wizard, by the way. We haven't mentioned that.
Yes, no, we haven't. A nice detail. Of course, that's what they would go to. In that society. Makes perfect sense. Reminds me a little bit of, have you ever seen the film The Spaceman and King Arthur.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, you have seen all the good films.
Yeah. I remember that one ends with a duck, doesn't it?
It does, if memory serves. I've not seen it since I was a kid. But, yeah, it has that kind of vibe, you know, just someone from the future going back to a medieval period and the simplest of technology seems like wizardry.
So Sarah Jane keeps poisoning cauldrons in the kitchen whilst Rubish frees the prisoners.
Yeah. She also lectures the other serving girls on the basic tenets of feminism. They're having none of it.
Yeah. Yeah. Is it at this point where she goes, oh, you're stuck in the Middle Ages? And when they go, sorry, what? She goes, oh, doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter.
Yeah.
So Iron Gron frees the captive Lynx and plans to use the Doctor as rifle target rather than outright executing him. Mm-hmm. Except no one can hit him, so he swings on the chandelier and escapes.
Yeah. They are hopeless shots. You know, they need to take some lessons from Hal. Clearly.
Yeah, Mr. Accurate.
You know what? A little moment as well that just makes me like Iron Gron even more is there's that little exchange where the Doctor says that, you know, oh, they can take as long as he likes, he's in no hurry. And Iron Gron just cracks this really genuine smile and says something along the lines of, like, oh, he's, you know, be quick, I'm beginning to warm to him. And it's those little details, like, you don't need that in the script, but it humanizes him in such an interesting way, I think.
Yeah, yeah. Right, where are we up to? So he's swung on the chandelier. Oh, this is the best bit of the whole story, where the Doctor punches some guards in the neck.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
He kind of, like, looks at them.
Yeah.
Then says, come here.
Yeah.
Then says, look at my hands. And then just punches them and runs away.
Yeah. It's all done, you know, it's dialogue free. It's almost slapstick.
Mm. So he goes back to celebrate with Edward, but he still has the plan to free the hostages.
Yeah.
Lynx prepares for launch, and the Doctor says we have 5 to 10 minutes before the castle explodes.
Yeah.
I paused the episode. They had 7.
Oh, well.
Okay. So, they begin returning the scientists, and all of Iron Gron's men pass out because Sarah Jane has poisoned them. The Doctor has a new fancy shield that blocks Lynx's laser.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like they just kind of found that in the prop department and really wanted it in the episode.
It seems like it, doesn't it? It does just sort of come out of nowhere, really, doesn't it?
So, the archer, Hal, then shoots the vent on the back of Lynx's suit. He falls forward onto the launch button.
Whoopsies.
So, now they're cut short of time. So, everyone just runs. Castle blows up, even though the Doctor said, oh, I want... Even Iron Gron's men don't deserve this death.
Yeah.
They still get it served, don't they?
No, they don't they manage to escape?
Oh, maybe.
I think they do, because Bloodaxe wakes up and gets them all to flee. But obviously, Iron Gron's already met his fate, so...
Mm. So, yeah, the Doctor... And Sarah Jane then leave Hal so he can go tell Edward everyone's dead.
Yeah.
Even though he says, Doctor, you'll be rewarded. He's not really interested in that.
Yeah.
And then Sarah Jane hops in the TARDIS with him and we're away.
We are. Yeah. And the beginning of a beautiful friendship.
Yeah. Bigger and better things.
Yeah. Indeed. Well, there we go. So, yeah, I'm glad you had a good time with it, at least, even if it wasn't, like...
Like, I did leave it late to watch it. I watched it all this evening, and with some of the stuff we've seen, that would be a real arduous task. But it was a breezy 2 hours.
Yeah, I think that's one of the things that really strikes me with it is, by classic Who standards of this period, it really doesn't drag much at all. So, yeah, do you fancy doing a bit of Tom Baker next week?
I've got a story in mind.
Okay, what's your suggestion?
Okay, so on the perfectly legal streaming service I use, when you type in Doctor Who,
yeah,
so it comes up with, obviously, Doctor Who.
Yeah.
And then it has, you know, like Doctor Who behind the scenes and stuff like that. But one of the things is, I think it's animated, Doctor Who Sharda.
Ooh, Sharda. Yes.
It's one we've discussed.
Yeah, it's got a very particular history to it, Sharda.
Yeah, I know there's a story. I'm certain you've told me a few times that it's never been...
And you know what? I haven't seen it.
Oh.
So the only counter I can give you to that is that the idea I had was... we could maybe watch Horror of Fang Rock. And the reason I'm suggesting that one is because... Do you fancy seeing a Rutan?
Yeah,
We've heard about them.
I have seen them, David. Now, you might not remember this. My experience of the Rutans comes from the Doctor Who adventure games that
Yes, of course.
There's a whole level where you play as Rory, I believe.
Yeah.
And there's some Rutans.
Well, they're only on-screen televised appearance is in Horror Fang Rock. So that's an option.
Well, last time when we let people decide, should we do that again? Who should we let choose this time? Should we let James Swift decide?
Yeah, why not?
I'll message him. I'll send him a message.
See if he fancies it.
It's his week this week.
Fair dues. All right. Well, whichever one we decide on, I'm looking forward to it. Yeah. And if you're watching along with us, listeners, maybe keep an eye on the X feed. If you still use that, Matt.
Yeah, of course. Yeah,
I don't really pay attention to it, but
we're in the pocket of the Musketeer.
Well, there we go. So yeah, keep an eye on that, and we'll let you know that way which one we decide on, or just watch both.
How many episodes is Fang Rock?
Fang Rock, I do believe, is a 4-parter. Yeah.
How many episodes is Sharda?
Sharda might be a 6-parter.
Oh, I hope we do Fang Rock.
Let me see. Let me check. 2021 animated restoration. Yep, 6-parter. But the parts... Oh, no. I was looking at the comparisons. There's a 1992 version and 2021 version. The 2021 version, yeah, they're a standard 25 minute each. So, a bit more of an undertaking. And if you fancy doing a bit of extra work, Matt, you could also watch the 1992 VHS reconstruction and listen to the Big Finish adaptation starring Paul McGann, and maybe even read the 2012 novelization written by Gareth Roberts.
No.
It's wild how many versions of Sharda there are, and I have experienced none of them.
How do you spell it? S-H...
Yeah.
A-R-D-A.
Yeah. The one I have, of course, read is Life, the Universe and Everything, which is a Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy novel, which I believe Douglas Adams repurposed elements of Sharda for when Sharda didn't make it to screen. I could be misremembering that. But anyway... There we go. Yeah, whatever we do, I'm up for it. Looking forward to it immensely. But until then, as always, thanks ever so much for listening, everyone. And until next time, cheerio.
Bye now.
Thank you for listening to Neither the Time Nor the Space.
If you wish to contact us, our email address is timenorspacepod@gmail.com, and on Twitter we are @timenorspacepod.
And thank you to Alexander Urban for his smashing arrangement of the Doctor Who theme.